welcome everybody. It's nice to have all of you here for our June call here at the end of June. Got some reporting out to do, but mostly I think what we're going to do today is hopefully hear from you all, both in terms of what you're up to and then also get some feedback on how things are going and how we might change things or do better for next year, because the fellowship has been funded for two more years, which is fantastic. And in no small measure, it's been funded because we're able to say to our funders, hey, look at all this incredible advocacy work that our fellows are doing. So I tip my hat to you all and say thank you for helping us to get funded for next year.
Thanks. And I echo that thanks for all of your hard work. It's been very very rewarding for me too to be able to help out.
I don't feel, I don't know how everyone else on the call feels, but it feels like we owe you guys thanks, so it's hard to say you're welcome to that, but...
Well, we're glad to hear that too, but it really is you guys who are doing the real work, so...
Yeah, and I think that even, like, you know, making it to these calls, like, you know, I mean, of course, we don't expect everybody to have that, like, perfect attendance, but taking the time out to do these calls, you know, even taking the time to, like, kind of, like, think and process about this stuff, and, you know, I mean, whatever small things that have been made so far, I mean, you know, I mean, we're grateful for that, because, you know, as you guys are already probably guessing, you know, advocacy is not always, like, especially among physicians, there's a lot of times where, like, you're kind of on your own, you know, like, it isn't like you, like, you know, have as big of a team in such close proximity, as some of the other endeavors and efforts that we do as doctors. So, you know, like, that's a big part of what we appreciate is that, like, you know, this persistent effort. Okay, so with that, let's see, I'm looking at the agenda, and yeah, so why don't we talk a little bit about the June 12th DC Hill visit? I unfortunately couldn't join because some stuff came up at the hospital that I had to go and meet with the administration about. I'm not in trouble or anything, I just, you know, stuff that I couldn't reschedule. But yeah, I'm actually curious to hear from folks who, if there are folks on the call who are able to go for those Hill visits, I'm curious to hear your guys' stories, like what happened and what you think about it and all that good stuff.
Well, this is Becky. Toby and James, who were two of our DC fellows that were able to participate, unless they popped in here, Toby, James, or were you? Nope. Okay. So I can give a little update on what all happened there. And we had, in conjunction with some of the activity that the FDA task force has been working on related to antibiotics, and there's measures to try to fast-track more antibiotics going through the FDA, and there was a meeting that was happening on June 13th at the AAAS on medical devices. So we decided to add a day on prior to that, Thursday the 12th, for anybody that could get come in a day early and do meet with the Congress members around the FDA issue. And then I was able to outreach to a few of the DC-ish area folks and invite them, and James and Toby were able to clear part of their schedule and come in and join us for several of the visits that we arranged to talk about the bill that's been introduced by Representative Maloney of New York that would restore $10 million a year for the next 5 years of funding to the CDC to do gun violence prevention research. So we were able to do several visits related to the FDA stuff as well as around the gun violence CDC funding bill. They met with senators from and representatives from Washington State, Oregon, Maryland, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Pennsylvania, Senator Toomey, Senator Casey's office, Senator Toomey, was not responsive to us, and their House representatives, and Senator Warren. We had Becky Jones, who's a dermatologist on the FDA task force from the Massachusetts, the Ovi Northampton sheriff. So she's up in your area. She came down, and so they also met with your senators and I forget who her House rep was. But anyway, they made about 15 visits all together over that day. So it was a good day, and then at the end of the day, we were able to all have a nice dinner together, and Sanjeev was able to come in for that, and was a nice debriefing time as well as, you know, networking and hearing about what everybody was up to. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add about that, Sanjeev?
Yeah, I enjoyed the dinner quite a bit. I felt like it was very inspiring to get, you know, some different perspectives of, you know, how people wanted to affect change from both, I think, you know, inside the political process and then inside the world of medicine and then outside all of those structures. So it was a very wide-ranging conversation, and it was really good. It was also really just nice to put some faces to some names that, you know, I see in emails and things, but I'm better with faces, so I think it was just, I enjoyed that part, getting to actually meet some of the people that I've been, you know, reading their email, but not really knowing who they are.
And then also the Baltimore area NPA folks had a very successful potluck earlier in June. I'm not sure, Liz, were you able to go to that?
Yes, I was.
You want to tell people about that a little bit?
Sure. Pete Bjornsson was sort of the guest speaker, who is the father of the Evergreen co-op here in Maryland. And so he spoke about sort of a range of his experiences, both in terms of sort of his career path as well as some of the more recent developments of the ACA. Attendance was pretty good, and the food was wonderful. It was a great community building experience here in Baltimore.
It sounded like you all had a very good time. I wish I was nearby and it could have come too. Just for the others on the call, if you're interested in doing something similar, the Baltimore area group got together, I think in May, at a local pub and kind of, you know, just had a get-together and talked about what they might do down the road. And one of the members that has what sounded like a very nice house offered to host a potluck that was done in June. And we circulated invitations out to various, you know, through our database system. And they had what sounded like about 30 people there. And and we helped to arrange, you know, the speaker, and I sent up some packets of NPA information that, you know, could be given out to anybody that was interested. So if any of you are interested in trying to do a similar event in your communities, just let me know and we'll help you set it up. And if you're interested in seeing the packages of the information that we took around on the Hill visits, or having any follow-up or visits with your senators or House reps back in district, I'd be happy to help arrange that for you also.
Thanks so much, Becky.
You're all quite welcome. Does anybody have any questions about any of the stuff that we just laid out?
You know, Becky, this is Sarah. One of the questions I have is that I'm curious. I'm happy to sort of meet with my local reps. When I've been reaching out based on the NPA, you know, the sort of mailers that go out, it definitely, like, you know, Markey's office certainly and some of the other state reps are all sort of, like, so highly on board that I'm not sure whether it's a good investment. I don't know if other people feel that way, but, you know, I'd certainly be happy to do it if it felt like there were crucial folks who would like to hear from constituents who weren't already sort of, like, writing legislation and clearly on board.
What I was going to say, like, you know, for, I mean, I actually did a couple of Hill visits with the American Academy of Pediatrics Legislative Conference early last week, and we kind of went over this issue of, you know, what do you do about, you know, an elected official who pretty much on board, you know, like their staff gets it, and, you know, there isn't really a whole lot of persuasion to do, and there's, you know, not really much education. You know, the importance of intelligence gathering actually kind of got discussed, and we found it helpful to, you know, ask those questions of, you know, what can we do as physicians who are aware of this issue? You know, what can we do from the outside to help them on the inside? And also just to kind of get an idea from them about, like, okay, like, you know, from your vantage point of, you know, of, like, where you are with, you know, with, like, other representatives, who are, you know, the folks who you feel are capable of coming over to our side and just need some more persuasion, and who are the folks that are, you know, obstructive, and what is it going to take to maybe, like, you know, decrease their obstruction, or, you know, just, and really just try to get, like, you know, a sense of, like, the chessboard, you know, like, where are all the pieces, and get that, you know, that office's perspective. And, you know, some of that information is going to be a little bit tricky to get, like, off of a one-off visit, but, you know, the persistence does pay off. Like, the more that you're able to, you know, keep up a good relationship, provide them with, like, you know, extra information, data, things that, like, seem to be relevant to the conversation that you would have just had, those kinds of follow-ups actually do kind of, like, build the relationship that you would need to then ask those other, you know, questions about, okay, who else can we persuade, you know, like, and, you know, do that at kind of intelligence gathering. So, you know, with, we actually ran into this often with the Affordable Care Act, you know, where, like, you know, I would talk to physicians where they were like, oh, yeah, my member is totally on board. Sometimes they just need to hear that, you know, like, they just need to hear, hey, I got a doctor in my district who's, you know, totally supportive of this. And that in and of itself is, like, you know, what they needed to, you know, feel like they had some backup and, you know, and to take it to their opponents. So, I don't know, like, never underestimate, you know, the value of going to an ally.
And I, well said, Sanjeev. I would just add a couple of things to that is that you can, expanding on what you said about, you know, like, what kind of things can we do to help advance this issue? Sometimes there can be opportunities to, like, if they're going to have they want to do a hearing about something. Having that relationship with them, say, like, you know, in this situation, something that I failed to mention earlier is that actually Senator Markey, one of your senators there, Sarah, is the sponsor of the Senate companion bill, that Representative Markey filed, or excuse me, Representative Maloney on the CDC funding for gun violence prevention. So it's Senator Maloney from New York has the House bill, and Senator Markey is carrying the Senate bill. So, you know, if you are passionate about the gun violence prevention related issue there, would be really great to get in there, because they're going to be doing some more stuff on this, and maybe they would want to consider inviting an NPA physician to give testimony at a hearing that they might do on this issue, or it could be that if they are going to do town hall events in their community during in-district work periods, or have roundtable discussions. Sometimes they like to meet with, you know, business owners, or in this case could be healthcare providers or physicians, and talk about different issues. There can be stuff done in district. It also, you know, never hurts to elevate the awareness of NPA as a group of progressive physicians that are not afraid of advocacy and speaking out for what's good for their patients, and that, you know, thanking them for what they've done is an important thing, and then being able also to carry the stories that you of how your patients are either impacted by, you know, the legislation or benefited from something. Those are always helpful to take to them also.
And just one other little add-on, if you do get to the point where you are able to, like, gather some intelligence, or even if, like, you're not sure whether what you learned was valuable or not, it's worth, like, you know, checking in with Becky. You know, like, I mean, you know, Becky is, like, our, like, you know, she's, like, our intelligence hub, you know? Like, she knows what other physician advocates have experienced on their visits on, you know, the same issue. And so she will be able to, like, kind of, you know, help us build a context for all of this stuff. And, you know, it could be that, you know, the little bit of information that you are able to get that maybe doesn't quite make sense as its own individual piece. Like, you know, somebody like Becky or myself or, you know, even the other advocates on this call, like, we'll be able to kind of say, like, oh, well, you know, that helps us understand this other person or this other situation a little bit more clearly. I'm trying to think of an example. I come back to the Affordable Care Act, and there were times when, you know, there were in the California delegation, there were representatives from rural districts who were showing kind of like a wavering attitude towards passing health reform. And then when you sit down with them, you start to kind of learn that what they're worried about is that health reform in California was going to direct a lot of funding towards the big cities of, you know, San Francisco and L.A. And meanwhile, in their rural, you know, district, their hospitals were going, like, you know, they wanted to know, like, what's in it for me? And, you know, like, that was actually a helpful meeting, because it then becomes less about, like, oh, so-and-so just doesn't get along with, like, you know, leadership or whatever. It, like, it gets rid of all of that, and it actually does kind of help us, you know, I mean, go for a question that is worth answering. Like, what is in it for the congressman of a rural district in California to support health reform? And so, you know, just, I mean, like, you know, never, like, again, it's like, you know, never doubt, like, that the information you gather may or may not have value. Just bring it back to us, you know, and as a team, we figure these things out.
That's really great input, too. And something else that you can think of that we've done in other places, too, is invite them to come and talk to an NPA group. Jim put together an event, Jim Scott, our president, in Portland, and Senator Markey was, like, the featured speaker. Or not Markey, what's it? Merkley is the Oregon one. So, so there's a few ideas, and then and just looping it back again to Senator Markey and the CDC funding bill. So if you can make some time to get in there and talk to them and get an update from them of who are the next people that they want, that they're targeting to get to be co-sponsors of this bill. Because then, just like what Sanjeev said, you can tell me, and then I can mobilize our members that are in those states to go in and say, hey, Senator, you know, Senator Cruz, you should sponsor the gun violence prevention. No, we won't send you there, Anna. But
that's super helpful. I, just knowing what questions are useful for NTA to know is useful for me in terms of thinking about what the utility and going into these business are.
And so, and I'm always there for you to, you know, help prep beforehand. And we also do have now a new online tool thing. I'm not exactly sure what to call it, but that allows me to directly email any of the staffers and has the what is some of the most secret information in Washington, the emails for the schedulers for all the House reps and senators. So, and it also includes their district stuff. So if you want to, do a meeting and can send me, you know, the dates that could work for you, then I can put in the, even put in the request for you for the meetings too.
Okay.
Any other questions about, meeting with representatives or other kind of like hill visits or in-district visits or anything like that? Okay, so why don't we go ahead and move along, and this is your guys' turn to, you know, do the talking. So if you can just, you know, give us an idea of, you know, like how things are, like, you know, what kind of advocacy stuff you've worked on, you know, in your neck of the woods, what progress you've made, what you found to be, you know, like the most valuable, what you'd want to change about it, you know, and then any obstacles that maybe have come up that that we could be of help with, or just maybe that, you know, we need to be aware of. I told Becky to, like, call names, so that way it's a little bit easier.
Sure.
So, let's see. Liz, you were the first one on the call. Do you want to start? Press star 6 to unmute your line. Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you. This is Sarah.
Okay. Do you want to start?
I certainly can. So, you know, the main advocacy project that I was involved in this year was sort of like a little bit NPA ancillary. I know Becky and I have talked about it, but we had some local legislation that was around working on how to advocate for the inclusion of sort of how do we get enhanced interrogation included as something that should be considered in our medical licensure. And that was sent to committee, or was sent to, it was in the Public Health Committee, and it was essentially sent to study at the end of the legislative cycle, which was a couple months ago. So, you know, I certainly feel like being involved in this legislation gave me a huge amount of insight into how that the process happens. Certainly not sure exactly where we're going with it now and whether it's even the right approach to take. But, I feel like I'm a much more literate participant in the process, if that makes sense. And certainly thinking about my next steps as I move forward in, you know, the two issues in NPA that I feel personally most drawn to are the gun violence, but corruption, critical free speech issues, sort of what needs to be done. Certainly in my case, this is, you know, like on the way liberal end of the spectrum, so knowing where to stand in a peaceful voice to the staff or just reiterating people's already held political stances has been one of my upcoming questions. And certainly, like, finding the role for where the NPA fits in, and I think that has PFA and a lot of other progressive voices has been another question, because it's certainly, as I finish the scholarship year, something that I found very valuable, and I'm trying to figure out what sort of role to play in advocating this community is very different, obviously, than sort of Anna in Texas and some of the other states where our fellows come from, where we're, you know, way out in the left.
Hello, can you hear me now? Sorry, I feel like I'm like not doing the whole mute thing properly.
No, we got it.
That's awesome. So, I mean, did you feel like there were any unexpected, like, things that you weren't expecting to be, I guess, like, obstacles or challenges that, you know, because sometimes, like, even, like, our own best friends can be kind of, like, difficult, you know? Did you have any experiences like that?
Do you mean in our legislative attempt or in my fellowship year? Yeah, I feel like I would say that there were about 1,000 surprises for me, starting from like learning how bills actually become laws. The biggest one I would say is that I felt totally unprepared for what were actually the resistances that people brought. And you know, the example that I've been thinking a lot about is that So Jeff Sanchez, who's the rep who is the head of the Public Health Committee where the bill was actually brought to committee, had a huge issue a couple of years ago because he has a nephew who's getting electric shock therapy, and there are people labeling that as torture. And so he was sort of getting a lot of really negative press for being a representative who is, you know, promoting torture. And that was the news.
Oh, wow.
And so it became him with this bill that said, we want to get doctors losing their license if they're involved in torture. He said, absolutely not, because then my nephew won't be able to get his therapy, which is not, I think, even true, although the other big thing I learned is that in many ways, these legislators are much better at spotting unintended consequences than I am as a non-lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's just, like, never something I would have anticipated as a barrier. So going in and sort of realizing both that I am actually not, so I'm coming in as sort of an issues person, but I'm actually not a legal use expert, and so spotting out the unintended consequences in the actual language, and in addition to that, sort of knowing that there are all of these other issues below the surface that I'm totally unaware of, has been a huge learning point for me.
Interesting. Go ahead.
I was just making a note here, Sarah. That was a really good example that I'm going to use in the future when I'm talking about some of this kind of stuff.
Sure, I'm very happy to rearticulate it in a better way if that's ever helpful.
Were you able? I mean, is that still, you know, like, what have you been able to go back to him with more information, or was there, you know, like, where is it at with him right now on that level?
Yeah, so, I mean, the bill was sent to study, so essentially, like, if we want to reintroduce it, it's a whole new two-year cycle. And I think if I had to think about the next way to do this, I would say we need to go to him first and try and sell this to him as a way to get in front of bad press. But it coming up from behind him in his committee, you know, in our public hearing day, it was like us and the Death with Dignity ballot initiative, which had about 400 advocates, and we had like 5. So, you know, like, I would come up, instead of sort of speaking up from behind him in his committee, I would try and get his buy-in. I don't know if that's something that would be possible, you know, but I could easily spin this as, look, you got all this negative press, couldn't you get behind this as a way of sort of, you know, what language would you need in this to feel comfortable, and how could you get sort of behind this as a way of getting some positive press around what was a negative issue for you? I don't know how it works, but that's what I was brainstorming around.
I'd be happy to have some follow-up discussion with you about how you might approach this online. The study you mentioned, that's the legislative staff doing that study?
I'm sorry, when you
or
said
one
study,
of the,
what do you...
Did you say it's been sent on for some kind of a study, the bill?
Well, so I, you know, this is something I'm learning about, but I think that being sent to study in Massachusetts is like being put on hospice. It's like on the way to death, but there's actually no there's no study that actually gets done. It's like their way of saying, we're not going to talk about this and we're not going to kill it. So I think that being sent to study is, well, like, we're not saying no, but, like, no, we're not doing it.
Well, I'd be happy to help you figure out how that works in Massachusetts, but in Florida, that's not what it is. When it gets sent to study, there's actually, I mean, it can be a way that they try to kill it, but there's also a lot of opportunities for advocates to engage with the community and feed them the information that they want them to look at as part of the study. So, you know, being able to help the staffers understand issues around electroshock therapy and whether torture, you know, how that all fits together. If you could help them figure out that or help them connect with somebody who could figure that out, that would be a way to get that addressed within the study before it goes back to the legislature.
Yeah.
The next, totally. Finish. Yeah. But I mean, we could talk about that some more deeply offline if that's helpful.
Yeah, totally.
No. Okay.
Who else has something to report on? Well, I can share my unsuccessful month. This is Dave. I submitted an op-ed to the Seattle Times after the shooting here at the local college on gun violence, which was roundly rejected. Along with another local physician who also submitted his own op-ed, which was, I thought, quite moving. And his was rejected too. So I'm not sure what it is that they're interested in doing here. I didn't actually see anything in the editorial pages really around gun violence as a whole. There were a couple of letters to the editor, but that was the extent of it. Sort of disappointing. But I was also unable to schedule an appointment with my local state representative because our schedules just didn't mesh very well here in the last month. But I did have a nice conversation with her, and hopefully we'll have the chance to build the relationship down the road.
So this is Becky again. The other physician there in Seattle that Dave's mentioning is also a former Capello fellow, Charles Mayer, and he and I have had some follow-up.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he is. He was in our first class. Yeah.
In
Long Beach. Yeah. And so he is now submitting that op-ed to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Is that what?
Okay.
So we'll see.
It's an op-ed in an online newspaper.
Mm-hmm. And we also have the NTA blog. So if you want to send me we could either look for another media outlet in the Seattle or Washington State area. For you, or we could post your piece on the NTA blog. But I would also say that it could be time for an editorial board visit, either with you and maybe, you know, sometimes you can do them with, three is a good number, and if you want to do it with physicians, you know, maybe you and a pediatrician and an ER doc or something, you know, some combination that could address different aspects of gun violence that they should be, you know, considering and looking at. Or we could connect with some of our other advocacy partners, like Mayors Against Illegal Guns. They have a lot of connections with the police chiefs and you know, sheriffs and those kind of folk in addition to the mayors, or you know, the Moms Demand Action or the Brady Campaign or you know, some of our other or faith leaders. There are some more of the faith community leaders are getting involved in these issues. So if you're interested in pursuing that angle, I'd be happy to help you with that too.
Yeah, and there's a local state advocacy group around gun violence that might be some help there as well. I haven't interacted with them much, but Lisa is quite involved. With them also.
It might be a really interesting angle to look at it with, you know, from the physician side and put that first.
I agree.
Yeah, because it's been surprising, especially with this last thing that happened, that they have not been willing to address this issue there.
There's been plenty of coverage in the newspaper about it. It just hasn't been anything to speak of on the editorial page.
There was just a New England Journal op-ed, I think, Pete, that was sort of a Vivek Murthy pro, but also a, like, why are we letting the NRA do this piece? I'm forgetting right now who wrote it. I'm wondering if anyone's noticed any sort of ripple effect from that, or if that's just us all talking to ourselves in the medical profession who already sort of agree.
Hi, this is Mae. I actually tried to submit a letter to the editor about that editorial in the New England Journal, and it did not get published.
Huh.
I don't know if they typically publish LTEs in response to some of their more, I don't know, maybe political op-eds or something. It seems like a lot of stuff that they publish is more related to medical research study type issues. But right now, I'm trying to expand it into a full op-ed for, like, regular newspaper.
There may be some issues around there, given that it is, his confirmation is dependent on a vote in the Senate, and that's lobbying, technically. So there might be some reason on that side of it that they would shy away. Aside of just general shying away from controversial issues.
Which is weird. They published an editorial in the
first place. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their policies are on that. I've never really read many of the LTUs in the New England Journal, nor have I ever tried to submit anything.
Yeah, I scanned through a bunch of issues just to see what LTEs they published, and none of them seem to be in response to editorials. They always seem to be in response to research articles.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of loaded up with a lot of references and stuff, too, that I got from the NPA and the Law Center publication, but, yeah, they didn't take it. They didn't accept it.
That's too bad.
Well, you can send it to us. We can put it on the NPA blog.
It's okay, that's an idea. I'll do that.
Or, you know, or you might want to look at, you know, recrafting it a little bit and seeing if it's something that to submit to you know, the Houston paper. Or, you know, like, turn it into an op-ed. And, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to flesh it out to a full, like, 700 words and do that, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a great way to go, too.
All right. Well, we've got, what do we have left time-wise here? About 15 minutes. Okay. Do other people have things to report, or would you like to give us some advice and feedback for improving the fellowship as we start thinking about next year?
This is May. I have a meeting. I have a meeting on Friday with my state senator. So I have some of the folders of information about women's health and the gun violence prevention that I was going to bring to the meeting and share and see what was happening on the local level.
Great.
And then I'll check in with Becky. Yeah, thanks. And then I want to check in with Becky later about the local AMSA connections to see what she's learned about them so far.
Good. that has been a bit of a challenge. I've got those real names and real phone numbers of people. I think they're maybe caught up with the end of the school year. I haven't been able to get a response yet, but I'm not giving up. So I will.
I think this might be a good time because they should be on vacation now, right? Before the second year starts or third year starts.
I'm on the top of my list for next week when I get back to Chicago. And I might even try to call them on Saturday and see if I can push my way into their lives a little bit.
Sure, thank you.
Well, let us know how your meeting goes with your state rep.
Sure, he's, Democrat from the Houston area, so I'm guessing that they're probably pretty pro-supportive of what the same things that we're interested in.
Yeah, but like we talked about earlier, I mean, it's just good to build those relationships and let people know that you're out there and can be a resource to them. Definitely worth the visit.
With Texas being like Florida and several other states that haven't done the Medicaid expansion, I think that, if you have, a story or two to take with you that can illustrate the impact that that decision is having on your patients and your community would be a really useful thing, too.
Good. Hello, can you hear me now? Sorry, I'm trying to... Okay. One of the other interesting, observations that I've made about the Virginia battle over Medicaid was that some of the advocates were actually trying to point out about how keeping up Medicaid funding would actually be a job builder for a lot of Virginia communities where the hospital is the number one employer. So depending on your comfort level and knowledge base of that stuff, that could be another angle to try and work on.
What is their argument for that? Actually, I haven't heard that one.
So what they're arguing is that for a lot of the hospitals in different counties in Virginia, and I think that they were trying to make the case for a lot of the more rural parts of the state, that that the hospital is actually one of the biggest employers, number one.
Sure.
Number two was that if that hospital were to decrease services, then those patients would end up having to go much further away to get basic care. And that also means that these other counties would end up getting more revenue in their hospitals, and it would pit hospital against hospital, when in fact we should be building more collaborative systems. It was an interesting bit of testimony that they were trying to make, and I felt the economics were interesting, because that's kind of how Terry McAuliffe used Medicaid as his platform for when he was running for governor, was that he kept talking about keeping hospitals open and helping hospitals hire more people and becoming job builders, or job creators. And apparently it was one of these economic arguments that actually, when they did the survey and polling data, they actually found that was making people stop and think.
This is Becky. I'm going to send you a link. I just was able to pull up a fact sheet from the Center for Budget and Policy on the how Texas would be affected if they did the Medicaid expansion. So I'll forward you this link, and it looks like it's got some of the kind of stuff Sanji was talking about. But centered at Texas.
Alright. So what else is going on out there with you guys?
Anyone? And guys, remember, we also wanted to hear any constructive criticisms that you have for the fellowship so we can, you know, keep building on this and make it, you know, like keep strengthening the experience for future fellows.
Yeah, so kind of if you can take all the way back to last October when this started, and, you know, kind of think about that first day that we had in D.C., and then, you know, how that meeting went, what would be good to, you know, to keep from that or discard from that, and then also how these calls have been going and you know, what you think has been beneficial and what hasn't. That would be, you know, really helpful for us as we start to think and plan for the next year, which starts pretty soon, really.
This is Sarah. I don't actually know at this point who else is with us, and if there's other folks who want to weigh in. I certainly found that the weekend and the first day training, I came out of that with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, and part of that was some of the skills-based training, and part of that, you know, for me, the highlight was the setup Hill Day visits and sort of the lead up to that and the prep for it, and then the notion that, like, oh, I actually do have the skills to do this. I found incredibly empowering. I think one of the struggles with this sort of fellowship is always, like, how do you keep that momentum going throughout the year?
Sure. And that's part of the reason that we wanted to do these calls. We haven't done these calls in the past and have, or maybe not as regularly anyway. And, you know, want to keep in touch with you all through the course of the year, and hopefully you can, you know, be motivated by each other as well as yourselves. So.
Yeah, I certainly find them motivating. I think that it's also helpful. You know, there's always a balance on these sort of things about talking about things that are applicable to the group versus things that are applicable to individuals in their own states. And so I actually would have found it helpful to have even more of the, I think Becky had one-on-ones with people once, and sort of more of that directive, what could be useful in your state given the campaigns that MPA is working on as I was going along, I think would have been helpful to me in knowing where to focus my energy. The group calls are really useful for, I think, keeping us all connected, especially if enough people are here. But then I would find that I'd sort of go out and be like, oh, what's the deal in Massachusetts? What could I actually be doing there specifically? And I'm not a politically savvy enough person to necessarily know that on my own. I don't know if other people agree with that.
Let me ask you a clarifying question here. So with this year's fellowship, in previous years, we have made these monthly calls for the group like an optional. You know, we didn't, whereas with this year, we, you know, we made it as strongly suggested and planned for them to occur every month. Would it be helpful for us to, do you think, to put into the, you know, the list of activities for the next go-around to actually, in addition to a group call, to schedule a separate, you know, individual call with me or Dave or Sanjeev or, you know, on a monthly basis? Or is that too much? I know, you know, I have, you know, we made that available to anybody to call anytime they needed it. But do you think we should, you know, like, make that sort of a, you know, not a requirement, but a strongly suggested thing? Or is that too much to ask for physicians to do two things a month on that level? It could be, you know, maybe every other month or something.
Mm-hmm. I personally feel like monthly is perhaps a lot. But I think the thing, I'm trying to drill down and be a little more specific, but I think the thing that would have been useful to me is I think most of us are very motivated to do the work, and we want to know where the work is useful. So for me, knowing that it'd be useful for the NPA to know who Marky is working with on his bill is a targeted intervention that I can do to actually be useful. Versus, like, send out a letter to Marky, which is how the general NPA emails go. You know, I'm happy to do that, but it does feel a little less useful to the whole group and to the movement. And that's obviously very different from your advice to give someone in Texas or Virginia. So for me, it's somewhere between getting one-on-one mentoring and getting sort of more geographically specific advice about how to be the most effective about the issues NPA wants us to care about, and we obviously do, but sort of like knowing where specifically in our state to get involved. I would have found that helpful.
Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. That's actually really helpful feedback for us. Anybody else? Anything come to mind?
So let's say you have a colleague who is maybe interested in something like this. What are you going to tell them? That is, you know, why should they do this or why shouldn't they do this?
Or even what do they need to consider if they want to do something like this?
If we sent you guys a little survey, would you fill it out?
I certainly would. Betsy, I don't know if you have a sense of who's actually here at this point. I'm wondering if we're sort of, it's not that we're, I think we started out with low numbers, and I don't know, this is there, obviously.
Yeah,
who else is still here?
Probably true. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I'm not even answering your question. but I am one voice. So I'm happy to keep answering. I'm just not sure if there's other people here.
Liz, Anna, May, are you still here?
That's our
yeah, friend. I got you back in. I'm back.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Glad to have you back.
No, I was having some issues with the sound, so I called back in and was having some issues. I think that if someone is interested in developing and enhancing their advocacy skills, I think this is a really useful program to help improve that. I think that the monthly conference calls were very helpful, especially when you're out working and all you're doing is like patient care and worrying about your job and trying to figure out how to balance all that other crap. Having the conference calls on a monthly basis and participating in them is really helpful to kind of keep up the momentum and kind of keep that spirit alive so that you know that other people are out there and they're also trying to help you and support you in doing this other work, too.
Good.
Thanks.
I didn't realize that they weren't strongly suggested in past years. So I think it would be very easy if you just went to the annual meeting and then came home and then kind of fell off back into your regular life of, you know, not doing
yeah,
that stuff
what,
as much,
that's
having that support.
Part of what we've had happen in the past, and which is why we wanted to try this. So you're kind of you guys are the guinea pigs, and you know if it's useful, we'll keep doing it. If it's not, then we need to think of something else. So, in the, you know, that first day that we had in D.C., kind of had a mix that day of some skill building and some issue-oriented type talks. And we had a lot of discussion about, well, about how much should be issue-oriented and how much should be skill building. And I'm kind of curious about how you feel that balance was, if you can remember back that far. And, you know, was it both helpful? Was one more helpful than the other? How did that strike you?
So I don't know if this is a helpful answer, but I remember thinking at the time that the issues-based part, the skill-based part, I was coming at it out of it with a lot sort of related to how I would work on my own issues back home, and this is in part because I was sort of working on legislation that was unrelated to NPA's main goals. And I had the feeling walking out, I was like, well, it makes sense that NPA would want us to be well-versed in these issues because they are their issues of interest right now, and so they want us to come out literate in speaking about the issues that the NPA is sort of spearheading. And I remember at the time being like, okay, I'm happy to do that, but I will say the aftermath of that is that I definitely feel much stronger now than I did a year ago about the gun violence and my role in that. So I think it's actually sort of changed my view of how I think of myself in that particular issue. So I don't know how helpful that is, but it's my own reflection on sort of what the aftermath and the effects of those two parts of the training were. That's how it's been for me.
Okay, I think that is helpful.
Yeah.
Now, that was May, right?
That was Sarah.
Sarah, okay, sorry. Trying to get these of the voices there. Okay, good. All right, I might follow up with you for some. Yeah, good. Thanks.
I had a question for the group about guest speakers, because we did have... We had one, and then did Mark do a talk for us? Mark Ryan? I'm trying to remember. I know that we talked a lot about Mark Ryan, but I'm like blanking on whether he spoke with the group
you
or
mean
not.
On one of our monthly calls?
Yeah. I guess what my question was, no, he didn't. Okay. Well, that's right, because he like our schedules couldn't line up.
He's still available to do one for us, so we can, that's still something that's on the list that we can, work into the schedule. He's in the Dominican Republic again now, so this is, June is a bad form, but we could look at, as July or August or September.
Well, I was curious to hear from the fellows about, how they felt about guest speakers. Was there not enough of them? Was it just right? I mean, it'd be nice to know that kind of balance also. Did you get tired of hearing us talk all the time? Like, that kind of thing.
This is May. I think that depending on what the topic the guest speaker is about, it can be helpful. So if there's something there that we wanted to learn a little bit more about, then I think it'll be fine. But if the people who are really good at that topic are already working with us already, then I don't know if it's necessary.
Okay.
Aside of the social media, Twitter stuff that we have Mark Ryan lined up for, are there other areas, skills that you would like to enhance that we could, that would be helpful for us to put on the list? That we haven't already covered so far.
Well,
Well, I'll throw out this idea. Maybe someone can react to, you know, we've kind of talked a fair amount about advocacy with federal legislators. And it's not that much different when you're talking to state legislators, but there are some differences, and we do have some allies that work specifically with state legislators. Would an advocacy, you know, discussion around state, dealing with your state legislators be something that would be helpful, or you feel like, you know, we've kind of already had enough of that?
This is Sarah. I would personally love that because I feel like it's sort of where I feel both more effective and where I've been working without really what I'm doing. So I personally would find it very helpful.
And maybe we could focus on how working with a state legislator is different than working with a federal legislator.
This is May. I agree. I think it would be helpful to hear about state working at the state level. I don't know if that will be a more useful thing sometimes for maybe people from the same state to hear. I don't know if it will be necessarily, depending on what the topic is, it may not be helpful for everybody to hear.
We have some folks that we work with at the Progressive States Network who are for those of you who know what ALEC is, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that's the right-wing state legislative kind of think tank organization, and the Progressive States Network has been established to be a more, you know, a counterbalance to that that works with progressive, more liberal state legislatures. In places all around the country. So I think they're a multi-issue group, you know, that works on health care and a variety of things. So I will get them on the schedule.
All right. Well, I want to be sensitive to everybody's time. It's getting after time, actually. And but, you know, just kind of keep this in mind, and if you want to send us some feedback outside of the call, that would be great. Maybe we'll talk about putting together some kind of not very difficult survey to send out since we have a relatively small group of people today. But we really do want to make this as helpful as possible for, you know, for those who devote their time to it. So we appreciate your feedback tonight.
Yes, thank you all.
And also for your great work this year that's allowed us to fund this for two more years, which is, I mean, we've been doing this year to year for several years, and we've got 2 years of funding now, which is, I mean, just tremendous. So thank you for making our funders feel like they want to give us more money.
Yay!
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely take it as a sign that I think whenever I hear news like that, that's a sign that, you know, people really believe in what we're doing. You know, like they really, you know, value so much of you know, the time that you guys and the effort that you guys are putting into this. So and none of that would have been possible without you guys. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you all. I'm here at this training in Chicago with groups that were so intrigued to hear about NPA. And it's been, I've been singing your praises, so reach up and pat yourselves on the back. You deserve it.
I think for all the work that we do, Becky, you put in hours more, so that appreciation goes both ways.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're here. Quite well. Hey, no, I feel very fortunate to be able to work for good doctors. My personal life has not been full of good doctors, and to know that there are so many of you out there, boy, really very important. So thank you for letting me work for you. Yes.
All right. Well,
okay.
Should we slip past sign off for this evening?
Sounds
sure.
Good.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.